Grade 4 Conference, Lecture 64, Zoology, Part 11. So in concluding this series on zoology, I want to suggest some exercises, some work that the children can do in relation to the block. Number one is, of course, working with their wonderful main lesson books. And here, as I said earlier, you want to do everything you can to be a good model for them about how to draw an animal. You know, make it simple, make it basic. Some of the children may do their very best work with beeswax crayons, and that's fine. Others may be ready for the greater detail of pencil. But then please watch the little instructional film I did on introducing your class to pencils so that you're not just getting, you know, little skeletal things, but something that's filled out. The drawings that you see in my students' main lesson books are a combination of block, stick, beeswax, as well as pencil. And I think you'll see, you know, from the beginning of the block till the end, where you get some of their remarkable drawings, particularly of the eagles, that they really were moving forward in their ability to do this. I did let them work from John James Audubon. I had a few other works of art around here and there, reproductions that shifted through the year, but showing artists at work on animals. We also went, as you'll see, to a local farm where there were horses and cows, and the children then tried to draw these animals from life, not thinking, of course, that the animals would be in movement. And that was a lot of fun for them to realize it's a lot easier to draw a cow than a horse. But if that's possible, that's good. A trip to a zoo, well, I don't know, it's kind of unavoidable if you have a very good zoo. And we had, of course, the Bronx Zoo in New York City, one of the great ones. But, you know, it's a very, very artificial setting, and you're surrounded, if you want to speak about zoos, the children of, you know, the uncontrolled children of families coming to visit or other schools, that becomes such a scene in the presence of animals. You know, if a lion roars or if the children see snakes behind glass or anything like that, it's very, very hard. Unlike an art museum where you can hold on to something of the children's feelings of reverence and awe, and not the kind of cartoonish responses or video game-ish responses that you might be getting from other children. So I would say, on the whole, I wouldn't do it. Encourage parents, if the parents want to take their children to the zoo or if they want to take a small group of children from the class, that's good. But it's, on the whole, it doesn't, they don't get so much from it as they do from your imaginative recreations of the life of the animal in nature, in its you know, real habitat, rather than what you see even in the very best zoos. Modeling. Now you can be introducing the children to clay modeling, and it is good if they can do models of some of the animals, not so much stressing the realism, you know, the scales on the fish or the feathers on the bird, but rather, again, the gesture, the sense that here's an animal that's filled with air, here's an animal that's very watery, here's an animal in which the spherical quality of the head is trying to dominate. Here's an animal in which the angularity of the limbs is very strong. So that sort of approach can be helpful. Something that you can do, and this, again, you can do this at sort of any time. You can begin the block, you can end the block this way, is to have the children get down on all fours and try to use their feet and their hands as though they have four legs now, you know, to really get a feeling for that, what that would feel like to be, you know, sort of holding up their body with that, and move around, walk around. They don't have to roar or moo or anything. Just, in, you know, you don't want this to be a mob scene, and maybe in your class you can only do it with five or six at a time. But that every child has that experience, and then perhaps have them take an object, you know, in a wax bag or something like that from their lunchbox, or maybe you prepare something, a bag with some food in it, something they really want to eat. And what is it like to try to get at that without being able to use your hands? We're not going to act like we're a raccoon with actually remarkable ability to get at things with its paws, but let's just be for now a cow or a sheep and see what it's like. And we let them have that experience. Of course, you know, I wouldn't put a pencil in their mouth and tell them to draw, but they could start to imagine that, what it means when you do not have a limb that is free of bodily function, is free to do completely different things. It may be the first time that they awaken to what it means to have hands. And the human hand is something we're going to come back to in seventh grade, when they're going to learn how to draw the human hand, and when they're going to see how prominent the hands are, be it in the Mona Lisa, or in the Last Supper, or in God touching the hand of Adam, or anything like that, in the great art of the Renaissance, how much those Renaissance artists understood to be human is to have hands, and also that if you don't have those hands, then your head has to become a kind of fifth limb. And your head becomes, you know, your hand as well as your organ for sensory experience, and how limiting this is and how difficult it is to look up for very long. You're going to tend to be on the horizontal plane, or you're going to tend to look down a lot. So I can tell you, doing this once again in a reverential way, don't just make it silly or a little gymnastic game, but that the children really are given some time and space to fully experience what it would be like to support their weight completely with their four limbs and not have then the freedom of limbs that could be utilized in a very different way, and not have the freedom of a head that has remarkable mobility and agility, that our head, you know, think of all the things we can do with our head, because again, it is somewhat removed. It's not a weight bearer, and it's not pulled down by gravity, as the rest of our body may be. So this can make for a very, very good conversation, which in turn will be a good foundation for Renaissance art and the meaning of the human body in seventh grade, as well as anatomy in eighth grade, and what it means to have an upright frame and the kind of spine that we have and all of that. So these are simple exercises which, once again, without a lot of preaching and without the kind of strident quality I described as used to be characteristic in this block, where the children can gain a healthy sense of how different we are from the animals, and how, in a way, the animal has come to a certain limit, a certain stoppage of its further development, and how our upright stance, our free arms and hands, the freedom of our head, all of these things are really pointing to the future. With this in mind, I will conclude what I have to say about this wonderful, important seminal threshold of a main lesson block, and I wish you great success in teaching it.